Blog Talk Radio.
Unbothered. 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 Impermeable. Unbothered. Impermeable. Unbothered. I'm the people's champ. Obama. And you don't understand. Melania. Permeable. Unbothered. Sick. Allergic to the con artist. Shoo. Fake woke. Shoo. An imposter. Only real ones up in my roster. Like Junior C. That's my roster. You know I just been bossed up. I've been high. My shit been bossed up. I've been high. My shit been
Well, hello.
Hello.
Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday.
What a happy Tuesday this is. For some people, this is an extremely happy Tuesday.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. For so many different reasons.
Yeah.
Right.
It's crazy because we have this topic regardless of what the verdict was, but... yeah, so I don't even know how, I don't know what to say.
Well, you know, what's interesting for me is that you are, Kandake and Sasha, you are the first individuals that I'm speaking publicly about this.
Oh.
And it reminds me of when we were, I should say, growing up, that anything important happened, we would have a family discussion.
That's right.
Oh, man.
And
every
so
time.
This
every
is
time.
Like, yeah. So this is our family discussion.
There we go.
This is our family discussion.
Man.
First dibs. First dibs.
Well,
you know,
I always thought, as I think now, that when things like this happen, the first conversation should be with families.
Yeah.
That's why we always did that.
True.
I felt anything that was important needed to be discussed in the family first, and then you can go public, which I'm going to do tonight. But the idea
I tell people where to find you.
Yeah, well, I'll be on, if you go to my site, Professor Kaba.
It's Instagram Live, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I'm going to be doing, I'm going to Instagram for about the first 20 minutes.
Oh,
but
okay.
But then I'm going to, because... I'm doing something
with
the
after
tonight.
Show.
You know?
The after party after party.
Well, we're going to be doing it simultaneously. I'm going to be Instagramming live my StreamYard.
Oh,
but about
okay.
20 minutes
oh.
in, I'm going to end my Instagram live and continue on StreamYard on my site, Professor Kaba.
Well, excuse us, Mr. Fancy.
I just want to. I just need to know who taught you all of this. Because that's how
let me
know. I don't even know
me.
How to do that. StreamYard, excuse me.
Let me tell you, we working.
Don't you have to be invited to StreamYard? You can't just you can't just pop up on there.
No, you can go.
Is that the?
Yeah,
oh no,
you,
I'm thinking.
If you go to my site, it'll have a link.
Oh, okay. No, I'm thinking of another platform where you have to be invited. You can't just go onto the site. I forgot the name of it.
Yeah, there are some that are like that. But there are some that are open. If you get the link, you can go on.
But again,
my family first conversation and my initial feelings, you know, our initial feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I've told you over the weeks that we've had this program, things are changing for your generation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And recognize what you have to do beyond this. This is not a win.
That's the most important thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about this like somebody won something. All they did was their job.
Mm-hmm.
All they did was their job.
That's what they were saying, that it's not justice, it's accountability, something like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's like when they say, you know, people get award or get recognized for doing something they're supposed to do anyway. It's nice
That's
to
right.
get an award. However, you were supposed to do this anyway. You know, yeah. You shouldn't get an award for doing what you were supposed to do anyway.
That's right. That's right.
We,
this only
we
shows
expected
that...
something, I'm sure. Go ahead.
No, I'll follow you. Go ahead.
No, I forgot.
Well, what I was going to say is that
the
exception has become the rule. What happened today is not supposed to be an exception. It's supposed to be the rule.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And we're getting all
like,
happy
all
and serious.
It.
We saw it. And they did their job.
We all watched the video.
And I congratulate them on a very difficult job because it was a difficult job, but it was their job.
Yeah.
I've done jury duty before.
Exactly.
I know what that is.
Exactly. Oh, goodness. I do not like jury duty.
Uh-oh.
Wait, did mommy just say that?
Yep.
Well, I love jury duty. That's the thing.
Oh, my God. Of course you do.
Oh, goodness. Because of the drama. That's what it is. Court case of drama.
Yeah, I love to do, you know, follow real things and make a decision, you know?
Well, they never
like
picked me for jury duty. They never
me
picked
neither.
Me because... because I'm a social worker, so they think I'm going to be impartial.
And I was 8 months pregnant the first time I went. So.
Oh,
and
man,
I'm a teacher.
Even though I don't think they realize that. Oh well.
You know,
I
on cases where
that
you
I,
have
that
a teacher.
Me, but.
The
oh,
one thing
yeah.
about all cases yeah. is that the one thing that you know for sure is somebody's lying. And the
yeah.
one thing they don't
yeah.
want is people.
Yeah.
that can identify who's lying. So teachers never yep. really get it. Because they don't
like
want people that can.
Colleges wouldn't get it. Teachers wouldn't get
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
And,
that makes
you
sense.
Know, one time there was a case that I was on where the defendant was suing, well, the person was suing the housing authority, the project where they live.
Oh. Oh.
And they kicked me off the case because the first question they asked was, have you ever lived in a project?
Oh, my goodness.
And when I told them my first 15 years of my life was in a project, they said, dismiss.
Yeah.
Because they felt that I would be partial to the person that got injured on the stairs. Because that's what it was. They
right.
got injured on the stairs.
I mean,
but
that
other
sense.
Than that... Looking at the issue at hand, what do y'all think about what happened?
It's crazy to me that people are so in love with the judicial system and they're just so obsessed with it and they think it's the greatest thing. When we know that people are lying, we know that people are paid to lie and make it sound like the truth. It's just amazing to me how obsessed America is with a system that they know is so just gross. I watched 2 days of the trial. I could not get past the second day. I didn't watch it again until the second that they were about to announce it, and that's when I started watching it. It is disgusting the way that judge made that woman, the EMS worker, cry. Like, it is abhorrent to watch this and to think that we're, not us, but Americans are obsessed with this system of what they call justice. And it's an absolute fabrication of reality. It's just amazing to me that people think that this is a good thing, and it's not.
Kandike, what do you think?
For me,
initial thought.
Honestly, like, I did not watch the trial at all because I just felt like, for me, from a mental standpoint, I just couldn't take it. And, you know, a lot of people, yeah, like a lot of people will sit there and watch and be re-victimized trial after trial after trial.
Yeah.
I mean,
I can't
tell you how many trials we've watched thus far and been so disappointed at the end result. And so for me, I just said, I'm going to find out the result. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not going to watch it. And that was a personal decision that I made. But hearing the results, I had mixed feelings about it. I mean, of course, I'm extremely happy at the results, but this is only half of it. Because I was watching the after, like, discussions on CNN. He still has to be deemed, like, his amount of time away still has to be determined. Like, it's not a guaranteed, like, life sentence, or not a guaranteed, like,
yeah,
sentence that he's receiving. So even though this was a check, you still have to jump through some more hoops. And, you know, there's still that gasp of air holding your breath to find out the verdict. And you have to go through that again. This is not the end-all, be-all. This is, you know, happy for now, not taking away from the happiness that, you know, this is a V for victory. Like, this is the closest we've come to feeling justified, feeling heard, feeling empowered, feeling a human being. This is the first that the closest we've felt to feeling like that because of everything that we've dealt with, not even counting prior to 2020, like not even counting everything that we've gone through just in our civil rights and everything, but just look at these past 2 years, these past couple of months. It's like, it's been just one after the other that we're still seeing people being killed by police and just people being killed in general. And the mass shooting, like, I feel so conditioned to death now. And it shouldn't be like that. And I'm an adult. I can't imagine what these kids are dealing with and feeling. Because I know personally growing up, we didn't hear one thing after the other thing after the other thing that hit.
We didn't have social media.
But even social media, like even the news, like you didn't hear about all of these mass shootings. You didn't hear about all of these deaths by police. You didn't see these victims and sometimes these survivors of these situations. You didn't see it firsthand. It wasn't, there was no face to the name. And you didn't really hear about it. Not saying that it didn't go on, but you didn't hear about it. And for me, I just feel like with everything going on, we have to keep a hold of our mental health because it's so much going on and there's so much that people are talking about, not talking about, feeling, not understanding why they're feeling the way that they feel. But again, not taking away from today, we have to celebrate today. And I was listening to an interview afterwards and the brother was like, we're going to celebrate today and then tomorrow we have to get to work. And that's exactly it was a brother. It was George Floyd's brother.
Oh, the actual brother, not a brother. Brother. Oh,
No. His actual brother said, I forgot his name.
Felonious.
Felonious. He was doing an interview with one of the anchors, and he was saying he's going to celebrate today, but then tomorrow is when the real fight happens. And that's what we have to do. We can't just sit around and wait. We can't sit around and hope that this is going to happen,
mm-hmm.
this sentence is going to happen, because guess what? The only reason that I feel like the sentence was given was because people were in an uproar, people fought. And they didn't fight physically. They fought and they hit them where it hurt.
Yeah.
They hit people.
Yep.
They hit organizations. They hit the judicial system where it needed to be hit in the time that it needed to be hit. Because George Floyd's death was no different than all of the
right.
other deaths that we've been seeing. But it was just the timing. This was the perfect timing for
yeah.
a revolution to
the
happen.
Pandemic.
We
right.
should never...
Yeah.
We yep. should never have another 2020 year out there. It's one thing for us to be getting hit from every direction, from like a nature standpoint. Things are unavoidable.
Mm-hmm.
But in life, the only thing that we can do
mm-hmm.
with unavoidable situations is to have control over our responses. And we have to control our responses to these situations. Because a lot of these situations are outside of our personal hands. But guess what? When you see something, say something. Because honestly, if that girl that I think she was 17 at the time, if she did not have that video of that situation, we would not even be talking about that, because those that are making the reports would made it so that it was an accidental situation. And it was not.
Because did you hear him lie? Did you hear him lie to his boss right after it happened? I mean, that was just, oh my God. Like, that was just, how
and
could you just murder someone and then lie about it? Like,
disgusting. So nonchalantly about it. I mean, it's time and time again. Even even a brother that recently, in same Minnesota, same situation, 6 degrees of separation. I believe it was George Floyd.
His girlfriend.
Yeah, it was like a relative.
His girlfriend was the kid recently, his teacher.
Yeah. And he, the same thing with the 26 veteran for 26 years on the force, who mistakenly used her gun as a taser, mistakenly. And go ahead, Daddy.
No, please. I don't want to interrupt your thought. I just want to ask questions. I really want to focus on your generation in our conversation, but please finish your thought.
I mean, for me, it's just time and time again. And it's just like when I hear these sort of situations, I'm like, again, another one? What can we do? And this is the start of what we can do, holding people accountable. And everybody that does this, everybody that mistakenly, quote unquote, mistakenly does situations, they need to be held to the highest degree. And until that happens, we need to continue to do what we're doing. Have our voices heard, talk, make noise, make them know that you're here, and that's it. And we're not going to take this. We are a people. We are human beings. We are someone. We are mothers. We're fathers. We're sisters. We're brothers. We're nieces, nephews. We are loved by people, and this can never happen again.
You know,
and the system is, oh, go ahead, Dave.
No, I was going to say 1991, I should say. There was the incident with Rodney King in Los Angeles. And if you've, it was featured in Malcolm X's movie by Spike Lee. There's a scene where they show you the actual footage of this man across the street who videotaped. And it was not like with a phone. It was like he really videotaped it with a camera. And the police got off. That was 1992. Kondike, you were a young girl.
Don't be giving away
Sasha,
my
No, that's why I'm just saying, young girl. Sasha, you were a young girl too, but you were big sis, but you were a young girl too at this time.
Right.
I was born 2 years till was murdered.
Wow.
Mm.
My father, your grandfather, told stories about what he saw happen in Alabama. He told me stories what happened when he moved to New York. I have a book titled Without Sanctuary that shows photographs of lynchings over the years. The point that I'm making is for your generation, what you see happening here is built on the legacy of Emmett Till. It's built on the generation of incidences that African American people, have systematically for 400 years tore at the wall of oppression. Your generation is at a point now where you will be able to deal with these issues on a much different level. And what I just want to talk about is what you think you can do. I'm speaking on an individual level. What you can do to be able to take this incident and begin to develop a plan in your own personal life. What do you tell your children? What do you tell other people where we are right now? Your millennial generation, you are now continuing this. And let me tell you something. If it wasn't for Black Lives Matter, this would, you know, we talk about the young lady that took the pictures. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Phenomenal. Courageous. Powerful. Absolutely made a difference. Had we not had that recording, this all would have been swept under. But at the same time,
yep.
No one incident did it. It was also those young brothers and sisters, and some of them were elders too, that came out in the street and demonstrated every day, every
mm-hmm.
day.
Mm-hmm.
Your generation, the Black Lives Matter movement, pushed this through like it was, like I was reliving the civil rights movement of my generation.
Mm-hmm.
So my
That's
thing
why
is,
being demonized.
Yes. And, of course, you know the work that I was doing. I was deep inside of it. I was catching all sorts of stuff, particularly in the educational arena. But you just kept on fighting. I
mm-hmm.
kept on fighting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, nobody going to turn me around. Now, you're witnesses, so you know what I've
yep.
done. You were in the house.
Mm-hmm.
But my question is, your generation now, there are things we have to start to do. I'm speaking about your generation. What do you think we have to do, Sasha? What do you think we have to start doing right
you
now?
You know, it might not be the safest thing, but I can't help myself. I remember, and I feel like I've told this story before, but in answering your question, I was on the train one time, and this it was a couple and a son. The son had special needs. I hope that I'm saying the term correctly, and I'm going to try to make the story as short as possible because it was a whole train ride from 59th Street to the Bronx. So the whole long story, so I'm going to make it as short as possible to make my point. And I was reading a book on the train. And once I got on, I had to stop
reading.
Was
Koresh with you?
No, I was by myself. No. I was by myself. I don't think I would have done this if he was with me. But
okay, we're talking about your son for people that may not know.
Oh, yes.
I just want people to know who Koresh
is. I might not have done it the way – I would have still said something, but I wouldn't have done it the way that I did it because you'll see why in a second. So
okay.
The father, mother, and son got on the train. The father was being obnoxious. So I realized that there was something going on with the son. I didn't fully realize there was something going on with the father. But as he continued talking, you taking a train in New York City, you just see everything in the world. Like, if nobody knows what it's like being on the subway in New York City, just follow on Instagram called Subway Creatures, and you will see, you know, what goes on in New York City on a daily basis. But, I'm used to it. So I just was trying to ignore it. At some point, a young African-American teenage boy got on the train selling candy. Now, everybody that gets on a train in New York knows that people sell candy, whether you're supposed to do it or they're not supposed to do it. Nobody says anything. This father started screaming at the top of his lungs that the boy was triggering his son. He didn't know. No, he told him he was telling him to shut up. He didn't say why. He just told him, you need to shut up. And he just kept saying it over and over again. So the teenager was getting louder because we're all used to New York. So the teenager was getting louder than the person, than the man. And the couple and the son were white, or white passing for anybody that and you know what that means. They were either white or white passing. And so there was a black man sitting next to me, and he had on, like, a construction outfit. It looked like he had just gotten off of work. He was on his way home. He looked tired. He was just – and I was sitting scrunched up in the corner because this man didn't want anybody next to him. He had his hand in the seat, and the man that was next to me had his hand in the seat. So I noticed the man next to me, you know, from the beginning, from my first got on the train. The man that was sitting next to me told the teenage boy – and the man that was sitting next to me was a black man – told the teenage boy, you're triggering his son. Please stop yelling. So any normal person would appreciate the man that was sitting next to me and, you know, to get the guy to, so the teenager was like,
hold on a minute, Sasha, hold on a minute. What was the young man screaming?
He was selling
that he
candy.
Said was upsetting. Oh, so he was just saying candy, candy, like
he
Milky Way, things
yeah,
like
he
that?
Was
oh, okay.
When you, they say, like, oh, I'm not doing this in school. I'm doing this to stay out of trouble. They have a spiel now, you know. Of,
oh, yeah,
oh, I'm
yeah,
not for
yeah.
a basketball team. I'm just doing this. So he was saying that, but it was a regular voice. And then the father was telling him to shut. He was saying, shut the F up. So he was screaming at him to stop talking, and the guy, the teenager, was trying to be louder than the man because he was trying to sell money. He just assumed that the man was crazy, and the teenager was trying to do what he had to do to make some money on the train. So the guy that was sitting next to me, that was an average age, maybe 30, 40-year-old black man, standing next to me, very tall, very tall, sitting next to me on the train, he was telling the teenager, you're triggering this man's son. Please stop yelling. So the teenager was like, I didn't know that. And he's like, if you know that your son has these issues, why would you bring him on the train? Whether that's true or not, if you have a child, I can't say because I've never, but he was saying that if you have a child that's easily triggered, possibly the train on New York City is not the best place for him to be. But that's neither here nor there. That's not the point of the story. So what ended up happening, the teenager was going back and forth with the father. The teenager ended up getting off the train, and then somehow, I don't remember exactly how it happened, but the man ended up going to the button because we were sitting in the front car, which is supposed to be the same. No, it was the conductor car. I'm lying. It was the front car. Went and pressed the button to alert for assistance. This was the father that did that, the father that started the trouble. And at this point, the son was screaming, like, I'm so sorry, it's not my fault. So at this point, it seemed like he maybe had autism or there was something going on that had triggered him. So at this point, the son was yelling. And this is a grown man, but he had the mind of a child, or that's how he was acting. The driver of the train came and was trying to find out what was going on. And the father was trying to tell the train operator that the man sitting next to him was threatening his life. And I'm just sitting there, and the man, and before it got escalated, the father said, and I don't think he realized anybody was listening. He said, black people need to learn how to act. Or black people need to learn, something like that. And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and he was shocked that I was shocked. Because when you look at me, you don't really know what to expect. So he was telling the train operator that the man sitting next to me was causing trouble and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you are lying. I told the man that was sitting next to me, I said, you need to get off the train because this man is not worth it. I was trying to have a conversation to calm the man that was next to me down. So he ended up getting off the train. But then the man that was sitting next to me started attacking me. So this is where the story gets real. We went back and forth all the way up until almost the end of the Bronx from 59th Street. So we were going back and forth. And everybody on the train, and I'm sure somebody put it on social media. And so I tell this story because I think it's really important to protect each other. The situation could have escalated into something very dangerous. If the police had gotten on the train, they would have gone after the man that was sitting next to me. But we have to, if you have the ability to de-escalate a situation, that I think is what is important. Because it's dangerous, and we shouldn't put ourselves in harm's way. But if we can make sure that somebody doesn't get lied on by someone that is evidently someone that's racist, we have to lend our voices the way that people in George Floyd's situation lended their voices and their videos and everything else. It is important, like the worker that was the employee that was in the store, and he said that he wished that he would have just taken the $20 from his paycheck to pay because this wouldn't have happened. I mean, like, when we think about situations like that, we don't have to react to everything. Like, he didn't have to tell. I mean, and then he also wanted to tell his boys because he didn't want to get in trouble. So that's a difficult situation, too. But if he had the ability to say, you know what, don't even worry about it. I'll just pay the $20 out of my paycheck and avoid somebody's father and brother and son and boyfriend, husband, whatever, to be murdered, there's things that we can do as people in the community to protect each other. And I felt like it was important for me to do what I did on the train because that that situation could have gone very, very wrong. Because that it was evident that the man had mental issues, and the son, it was more obvious. And the mother, you know, she just was like, you don't know how I feel. She was like, I work with ADA, and you don't understand how. So it was evident that even if you are a family of special needs individuals, which is nothing wrong with it, of course, but even they can get black people killed, and there's something wrong with them, extremely wrong with their mental state. And not just that they're racist, because we know that something's wrong with their mental state when you're racist, but this was a person that there was evidently something of an imbalance in both of their brains, and they could have gotten that man next to me who was trying to help them. Because he really was trying to get him in trouble. If the police would have came on, he said out of his mouth, black people need to learn. These situations should not happen. We should not allow them to happen. So I think that that's one at any level of what we can do. We don't have to get physically involved and put ourselves in harm's way. But we have to, like, keep an eye out and make sure stuff like this doesn't happen and become educated on the system and work to change the system. Because even though this man is found guilty on all three accounts, that doesn't mean the system is different. If we don't change the way the system is, and there's a I talked about this before. There's a lawyer, and her name is Ebony K. Williams, and she was on The Breakfast Club, and she was talking about because of the way the law is written, police officers have the right to feel unsafe. If we don't change the wording of laws and, like, we don't get those things changed, it doesn't matter. They're always going to get off. The only reason he didn't get off is because of the way that everything was set up. They get off time and time again because of the way that the law is written. And if we don't make changes from the inside out, no amount of protesting is going to make a difference. We have to make changes to the law. And she was saying we have to make changes to the law so that the police feel safer and the community feels safer. And it's not to handhold the police, but it's to say you don't have the right to feel unsafe when you're supposed to be protecting the community from things that can harm us. You're a human being, but you can't. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, so what, from what I'm getting from you, what happened is the fact that you have to get involved and not be afraid. That's what I'm getting from what you're saying, because your generation is probably next to the next generation.
Yeah.
That is, you know, you are like the apprentices of the future. The millennials are.
Yeah.
And your generation is going to receive the ability to make those changes that you're talking about on a legal level, because young people get
right.
You know, young people get it. They understand if we're going to survive in the future, we got to make some very serious changes. We cannot go on like this.
And
I think that this becomes extremely important. Kandike, how about you? What do you foresee your generation, your role to be going into the future from what you've observed?
Well, for me, I just feel like, you know, with everything that I've been afforded in life and just the knowledge base, the experience, just talking with individuals, just understanding what sort of people need in a sense for support, I would definitely say that first and foremost, we have to support each other. You know, just piggybacking off of what Sasha said, we have to be there for one another. We have to support each other. We have to say, hey, you know, This argument may not be worth the fight. It may not be worth the end result that we can see down the line where this is going. Like, it's not worth it. You know, educate our youth. Educate not even just our youth. Educate ourselves on the responses. How do we respond? Because when I'm looking at the police force, when I'm looking at anyone of authority, what I see in them sometimes is that lack of feeling comfortable, you know, and fully assuming power and control over individuals, in which it doesn't even have to be a police officer or anyone of authority. It can be even a manager at your job. Like, that power and control and that high that people get off of that. And when you look a certain way and you present yourself a certain way, and when you physically look as though you would win a physical fight, and or if you're smart enough to be able to win a mental fight, people that lack that ability to accept, quote-unquote, defeat, or accept not being the smartest, tallest, most attractive person in the room, a lot of the self-esteem, a lot of that stems from why things are happening the way that they're happening. And so we have to first and foremost encourage each other and encourage our youth to really look at what they're seeing in front of them. Because it may be that a person that's trying to assume that power and control over you, but is it worth the situation that may occur if they choose to, quote-unquote, use their power and control against you? And we have to recognize mental health from across the street, basically. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what we're seeing, a lot of what people will plea, they'll cop a plea and say, oh, I wasn't in the right state of mind. I felt threatened. I felt my life was in danger. And like you said, things are written a certain way in order to protect individuals. Mm-hmm. And they will continue to get off because of the way in which things are written. So what do we have to do? We have to educate our youth.
Right.
Every time I'm with Christian, a.k.a. Caress, I say, Christian, what are you supposed to do if a cop ever pulls you over? Because you're almost to the point of being able to drive. Like, you're getting up there in age. What do you do? Drill that into him time and time and time again so he rattles it off his tongue. Like, and then when he's put in a situation, he'll be able to act and not be scared, because a lot of these youth that get into these situations, they're scared themselves. And your response, a fight or flight response,
they're babies.
When you're in – yeah, but a fight-or-flight response when you're in a situation that you've never experienced before, you know, you yourself don't know how to respond. Even as adults, we don't know how we're going to respond to a situation. So what we have to do is practice our response. We have to say, if this happens, what, like Daddy always did, fire drills, you know, what's going to happen if you ever come in an elevator and somebody follows behind you? What do? You say your middle name. That triggers that response from the person behind the door to already have police on speed dial in order to protect everyone involved.
What?
You practice our responses to authority, to police, to teachers that have that ability to fail you in a class and stop you from graduating. I don't know how many people out there have experienced that, but I personally have experienced that. And it's not a good thing when people try to wield their power in order to stop you from being successful. There's nobody out there that's going to stop my success because of my pride. Like, we have to put our pride aside, because a lot of times you're looking at ego and pride that really make or break a situation. If you're feeling embarrassed, if a police officer stops you and embarrasses you in front of your significant other, how are you supposed to respond? Macho? Because he's not going to tell me or she's not going to tell me what to do. No, you just do what you need to do in order to get home alive.
Yep.
And people don't understand that. So we have to, first and foremost, educate our youth, educate ourselves, continue to support ourselves, you know, keeping up to date, having our knowledge base, making sure we understand our rights. Can I check the trunk? Do you have a warrant for that? You know, but not in an intimidating way, but may I please see that warrant in order for you to search my truck? You know, things in that order. You, like, Daddy used to have a handheld.
No problems. By Jay-Z.
But he had a handheld, what was it? The
Constitution.
The 12th?
And a little
oh, the
Constitution,
yes. Yes.
The Bill of Rights.
You have to. Yeah, you have to educate yourself. You have to not physically arm yourself, like not guns or whatever, but you have to mentally arm yourself and prepare yourself for going out, especially nowadays.
Why you can't do it physically? Do you know how fast they were working on gun control and black people became part of NRA and started buying guns illegally? Absolutely not.
Ma'am,
physically arm yourself.
Ma'am, we are not in a state where we can have that. And if you feel as though you need to do that, look at all of the rappers that get in trouble because they feel as though they want to carry arms with them.
No.
That's not the way
to get it legally. I'm saying get it legally, and you can get it in New York. It's just not as easy as Atlanta or Georgia, rather. But you can get it
like
in
I
New
was
York.
Saying.
I was
okay, like Daddy
blog.
Asked me.
I was reading something.
So,
awful,
and then you could talk.
Sorry for the vulgar.
Anyway, arm yourself with that knowledge. Support each other. Be there for each other. Discuss these kind of things. Have this not this platform. This platform is not for everybody to get on. This platform is not for everybody to create their quote unquote blog talk. This platform is to get that conversation started. Not saying that you can't do it. More power to you. Our voices need to be heard, but you don't necessarily have to do that. You don't necessarily have to have something related to that for your voice to be heard. And that even goes back to when people were like how people are marching and they're protesting. Not everybody is meant to protest and be out there on the front lines. That's not everybody's job. There are individuals who are there to be teachers. There's individuals that are there to be that support system. There are individuals there that are to hold your hand and be there to support you. Like everybody plays their role in this fight. And for me personally, my role was making sure that I give back to my community. My role is to ensure that anybody of color that is dealing with what is going on in society, they have that ability to process it and talk about it. And how do you feel? How do you feel? Because you hear every day how other people are feeling. We constantly hear, you know, on every sort of platform how others feel about a situation. But how do you personally feel about that? Your individual, undivided, unbiased attention. And that is what we have to do for one another, whether we have that as our profession or whether we're able to really lend ourselves out there to be a support for for individuals, no matter the age, but specifically the youth, because as adults, we're able to get out and do and march and get out and do things. But as youth, it's very hard for them to express how they feel. And a lot of times they don't even fully understand how they feel. So just be there as that support system to have the conversation so nothing becomes taboo. Everything becomes on the table to have discussion.
Sounds good to me.
You know,
at this time,
you know, from what I'm getting from what you're saying, Kandike, is, you know, like what Sasha say is to have the support. And you're also saying to educate, to let our young people understand, you know, that was one of the things that I really wanted to speak to the young people about, to let them know, look, we've been through this 400 years. We'll get through this too. It was just very important to know this because in young people's minds, sometimes they can feel that things are hopeless. And that there are horrible things happening and that there is no hope. And I am just saying that just by what your generation did alone shows hope. The Black Lives Matter movement and the new Black Panther Party movement and all of the other movements that are still in place that are expressing themselves, this is what we've done all these years. Know that things are going to get better. But they'll get better when we make them better. Because we are dealing with the people that are very troubled right now. They're very troubled. And so I think that your generation is doing what it should do.
We have to. We have to continue. And it's not something that we can say this is final. This is not something that, okay, this happened and, you know, I've finished the fight. It's never ending. We have to, just like education, we have to constantly learn. We have to constantly grow. We have to constantly continue to practice our ability to voice how we feel. And it's never a time where you allow others to voice how you feel, because not everyone feels the same way and not everyone expresses how they feel the same way. So it's important to really, you know, continue to be able to have a voice, because a lot of times, I mean, look at how many people fought, died, injured to even be able to. Our ancestors gave us that ability to even have that conversation and have that voice. Like, constantly, people feel as though they're not being heard. Find that way that you feel like you're heard. And express yourself. And if people ain't listening, make people listen.
What would you tell a child? What would you tell a child?
Well, for me, I'm big on art. So if, you know, express yourself art-wise. Express how you feel. Put on that paper. Give me something that, you know, allows me to feel where you're coming from. Because a lot of times they can't put it into words. So, you know, write down how you feel. Draw a picture. Something that you're able to let me see through my eyes, what you see through yours.
Sasha, what would you tell a child?
Well, I actually told the child something today. Because Christian knew about, you know, Christian knew about what was going on, because it's on everything, it's everywhere, everybody's talking about it. And I just told him what the verdict was. Because it's important for them to know that, like you said about there being no hope, it's important for them to think that there's things to look forward to. Like that, I think, is the most important thing for young people, especially right now during the pandemic. One of the most important things is for young people to know that they have something to look forward to when they were younger. And it also makes you understand why there were certain things you didn't allow us to do when we were younger, because you always said, if you do everything now, what are you going to do when you become an adult? There's so much that I can experience that I didn't experience when I was younger because I didn't do it. So I need for him to know that there's stuff for him to look forward to. Because for me, he's going to be at least 6'5". He's got dreads right now. He's of a deeper pigmentation than I am. So I can never experience, and he's a boy, and one day he's going to be a man. So while he needs to be aware, and this is a conversation that I've had with someone before, while he needs to be aware of the reality of the world, he also does not need to fear it. And I refuse to allow him to move through the world feeling like he is a criminal because of how he looks. I need him to understand that he's amazing and that he can have an amazing life and go on vacation and do anything anywhere, and he should not fear, but he also has to be aware. He has to understand that there are people that are going to hold on. There are, you know, women and men, whatever, are going to hold on to their bags when he gets in the elevator, but he cannot live his life by the fact that there might be people that feel that way. I refuse to allow him, and I refuse to not go places, not do things, because I'm afraid that there's dumb people out in the world. I refuse to go, you know, like, you can't not go places, not do things because you're black, because you're in the same-sex relationship, because you're a woman, because whatever the reason is, we can't live in fear of the stupid actions that stupid people do because they don't understand or they're afraid or they're hateful. So what I told him was the truth. I was very – all I did, he was playing a game. I just went in the room. I told him what happened. He cheered, and then I walked out. We can have a conversation at another point, but I wanted him to know what happened and what was going on. So when he and he's great at thinking and then coming and talking to one of us, you, Candace, Daddy, Mommy, he's good at thinking about something and then coming and having a conversation about it. I just like to be honest with him, but also keep it. I like to keep him aware, but also let him know that you fear no man. There's no man in this world that you need to be afraid of. I mean, me, maybe sometimes you need to be afraid of me because I'm your mother, but. Just kidding. just kidding. Hopefully somebody laughed. But seriously, you cannot. No human being should put fear into your heart. I don't care who they are. You need to be respectful of people. Their positions can possibly harm you, but you will not live in fear of humans taking away the joy that you have for living. So that's how I feel about telling young people.
But what you just said is very important because of what I've lived and what I've observed. We have learned, not all of us, but some of us have learned to curtail our happiness for fear of their problems.
Right.
And one of the things that we must do is not be obvious and not try to be bullyish, but what happened during the 60s when peoples of African descent, see, we didn't want integration. That is the term that white people used. This is the term that European people used to instill fear in the heart of other European people. This is where the term, there goes the neighborhood, came from. This is what number 45 tried to do when he was talking to the suburban wives and women, that I stopped them from coming into your neighborhood. When in reality, the problem isn't that black people are moving into the white neighborhood. The problem is white folk are moving into the black neighborhood.
Exactly.
So even when you look at their psychology, you can see that there is a problem. And my key is never change what you're going to do. Most of us who are my age, we've gone through experience after experience after experience. And they're little things. They're not always big things. It's just a constant. As an educator in the Board of Ed, with numbers of European-American women, men too, but men approached me differently because we're man to man. Those racist women, they came at me differently. And what they'd always play is that when I responded, now all of a sudden, same thing with Trayvon Martin, same thing with George Floyd. What they play is, oh, I'm afraid of him. He is threatening me. Okay, I'll give you an example. I was teaching a class on, I was talking to my class. This was years ago. This was like a third grade class. And we had open classrooms in this particular school. In other words, we were not in classrooms. We were in an open area where chalkboards and whiteboards separated classes. So we could hear what was going on with each other's class, basically. And I was doing a class, and I was explaining to the children that slavery didn't exist, that there was no slaves, that you were enslaved. And I was giving them a vocabulary lesson on the word slave, which is a noun, enslaved, which is a process. It's a verb, adverb kind of thing. And I was teaching them the difference that slaves were not brought from Africa. So this teacher next to me of European descent busts in. I said, no, I don't agree with that. That little thing. That little thing, the first thing I said, first of all, why are you listening in my class? You want to take a seat?
Exactly. Get your behind.
Take a seat. Come on in. Come on.
See,
so what I did is that I made humor.
Go learn it.
I made it humorous so you can't accuse me of attacking you.
Yeah.
I said, come on in. Mm. Grab a seat. Sit down. Learn something. Because what you said, I said, I didn't say. So I got the children laughing.
It's what you heard.
Yes.
Exactly.
And it's the arrogant ignorance to think you're going to step in my class. See, this is part of what I call the demasculinization of the black man. These are some of the evidences of it. We all talk about it in one level, but I know it another way. I know as they try to chip away at your power in a school as a black man, they try to chip away at you. They try to bring you down in the face of the students and the other staff members. But what I did is I made them a laughing stock. Because from that day on, every time that teacher saw me, I had something to say to her about slavery, enslavement. You want to come into my class? I got a great class going on today. The whole I just taunted her. See, as a black man, when it goes back to what you're saying, both Kandike and you, Sasha, have said this, we have to have a strategy as to how to deal with this ignorance. Because if you deal with it in a way that is acceptable, because I could have cussed her out.
Yeah.
That would have been acceptable, but she would have used that against me.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's what they that's what she wanted you to do.
Exactly. And then
exactly. That's why I made that man leave the plane. That's why I told him.
And they,
that's why I said you need to step out because it's not worth it. That's why, you know, that's the first thing I said to him. You need to leave. It's not worth it.
You have to have a plan. You have to have a strategy. And you have to understand that your strategy may not satisfy your anger or your upset or how you're feeling. But it will, as you said, Kandike, it will allow your family to see you that night and not get a message that you've been shot by the police.
That's right. And you know what's funny is that your way of responding to that teacher could have really changed an individual's perspective on how to respond to things, because you could have responded in anger. There's many different ways you could have responded to her, because she was looking for a negative response. But what you did was you are a role model to those kids for them to understand. You can get your point across, and you can make that person look stupid for trying to make you look stupid without them knowing you're trying to make them look stupid for them to claim intimidation.
That's it.
Okay.
And you have to understand
that.
We all have to understand.
Play the game.
This is a strategy now. We now see that there are changes occurring. A change is going to come, like Sam Cooke said. And as we move through this process, we have to understand how to navigate and manipulate it to our favor. And this is what I see happening in the future. I don't celebrate the fact that he was found guilty, because my prayers are with my brother George Floyd, his family.
Doesn't bring him back.
The young brother Wright, Dante Wright, there with Breonna Taylor and her family, Sandra Bland. I could go through the list.
Yeah.
So this is not a celebration, but you know something? This is the living Asarian drama. This is the Asarian drama. The Asarian drama, the overall story says that for any civilization to move forward and to improve, there must be sacrifice. And unfortunately, the innocent many times are sacrificed for the guilty. You know, when you have a tumor, when you have cancer, they go in and they take the tumor out, which are dead cells. But at the same time, they have to take some of the living cells around the dead cell, because they're afraid that the cancer may have spread to those good cells. So they have to be sacrificed in order for the body to continue to live. In all civilizations, there is always the innocent that will be sacrificed. George Floyd, Sandra Bland, Breonna Taylor. I could go through the list. I marched just about every march with Al Sharpton and Attorney Alton Maddox. But I always stayed in the middle of the march. I didn't go in the front. So I've observed the marching. I remember when they used to take the bus to defend our brother Mumia Abu-Jamal in Pennsylvania. My prayers go out to that brother right now as he is undergoing surgery. who was a panther, who has been imprisoned. He is a political prisoner.
Mm.
So I remember this struggle, and I know what has happened. And I think that we are on the cusp of change. We are at a point, is the return of the Black Cosmic Mother. I'm saying that as a metaphor to help us understand that we are moving into the age of Hapi, which is the age of Aquarius. There is a change happening. It's going to happen whether we do it or not. There's a shift. We have to get ready. We have to prepare ourselves. Your generation in particular are the apprentices of the future. You are in a particularly important place right now. You are at a place where you are established in your backgrounds, in your jobs, in your life. You pretty much know who you are. You've grown to the size that you're going to be. Everything about you is who you were born to be. Now it's time to make it better. And that's what an apprentice is. An apprentice is someone who studies with the master teacher and learns their skill well. And that's where you are. You are in a change agent position right now. And I've looked forward to this for a long time. I just never knew it was going to come during my time. I didn't plan on going anyplace anytime soon. But I did not know this change was going to happen so soon. But you never know how things are going to happen. And I assure you, within the next 5 years, it's going to be even more profound. So fasten your seatbelts. A change is going to come. In fact, let me say that again. Fasten your seatbelts because a change has already come.
Mm. Do we got that song on deck?
I don't know. Let's see.
I think we do.
But sometimes it'll disappear. I think we do, but
if we got it, you know we got to play it. That's my song. Many different versions of it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. It'll be there soon.
We have to just understand what is happening and not get confused, because the devil doesn't lie. The devil confuses.
Mm.
And for a number of years, we've been very confused.
Is that my
voice?
We've
become very.
Oh, you
so
hear
the
story
in the background?
That's sorry.
Sorry, Daddy. Go ahead.
What are you saying, Daddy?
At first, I was going to ask y'all if you bought some birds. That sounds like.
No.
Now, I know what the squeaking sounds like. I got to deal with it on my end, too.
Okay.
Right. He loves it. And he does it. He does it sometimes when he knows I'm on. He's like a real child. He does it when he knows that I'm on the phone.
That's my big boy.
Something else. But that's where we are, and that's what we're doing. And I just look forward to your generation. No nonsense. Every generation has become harder and harder. And harder by means the attitude. Don't play with me. Okay? There are things that my generation took that your generation does. I don't even want to deal with. And then when you go to the younger generation, oh, my goodness. Look, if these people keep this up, they're gonna make Nat Turner look like a boy scout. Because if you think this generation coming up now is gonna take this nonsense from people, I think they better think twice. Every generation has gotten, and it's been in me, and I know what that fire is. I've had this fire all my life. People that have lost the fire, I know people who have trimmed their fire. Much respect.
Your fire
but
is
I also
fire.
Know And but it's trim. You know, there's a gospel song said, keep your lamp lit but trim. Because if we go off, that's it. And again, it goes back again to what you were saying earlier. You have to be in control of yourself. You must be passionate, not angry.
Mm-hmm.
Passion is emotion under control. Anger is emotion out of control.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Maintain yourself and always be aware of your environment.
That's right. That is correct. Just
so we'll
these small little morals of the story will help you in your time of need. And a lot of times people deal with situations and they respond to situations because they don't feel as though they're in control of their own lives. So take back control of your life. Enjoy yourself. Figure out what makes you happy. Don't try to make anybody else happy. And just do what you want to do in life because life is too short. Life is there for the enjoyment. It's not there for stress, anxiety. If you're doing something that you don't want to do, find something that you do want to do and move and transition into that position. And it's easier said than done, but you'll be able to get through. You'll be able to make a change, and you'll be able to be the person that you want to be and not anything else, not anything less. In that order.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Sounds very good.
Hold up to the people.
What a day.
Again, happy, H-A-P-I happy. That everything happened in the correct order and the way that it happened, and this is just the beginning. Buckle up.
Hey. My words are as usual. Keep on keeping on. It ain't over till we win.
That's right. And if Sam Cooke's not up, then we can do Daddy's favorite song.
I was on mute, apparently, because I was trying not to make you guys suffer with the squeaking. And I was talking, saying the song is ready on deck. And then I was trying to say things, and I was like, why does nobody let me talk? But it's because I was on mute.
You were talking to yourself, that's why.
I apparently was. I was talking to Pharaoh. And I would like to say that we need to lean into the things that we are good at as a community. We need to recognize what our strengths are. Everybody does not have to be a warrior. That's not the role that everybody needs to play. Some people, like you were saying earlier, Candace, and like I've said and like Daddy says, there are some people who are supposed to be teachers. There are people that are artists. There are people that are musicians. And these are – it's not important for everybody to be on the front line fighting like a soldier. That's not the role that everybody needs to play. We need, if you are a doctor, we need to protect black patients, I mean every patient, but especially when black people sometimes are not treated the way that they should be treated, especially black women are not treated the way that they should be treated. If you're a black doctor, you need to protect those people. If you are a black teacher, male or female, you need to protect children that are told that they're never going to be, that they're never going to amount to anything. We need to protect those children. If you work in a bank, we need to make sure that redlining doesn't happen. We need to make sure that black people are taken care of financially and educated financially. If you're a social worker, we need to, social worker, counselor, you know, whatever, mental health field, if you are doing that, you need to make sure that you are promoting the mental health of black people, because once we get our mental health under control, we will be a much better community on a whole. Whatever you do, if you are a black bus operator, you need to get people from point A to point B so that they can do what they need to do. If you are a black physical personal trainer, you need to make sure that the black body is healthy. If you are a nutritionalist and you're black, you need to make sure that you're healthy, that the black community is healthy. Whatever you do, the body is not just made up of a head or fingers. It's head, fingers, toes, knees, and every part of your body functions for a different reason. Every part of the black body of the community has a different function. And the fingers can't do what the leg can do. The eyes can't do what the mouth can do. Everything has to be in its place and know its role and know its significance, and that's the only way that we're going to move forward. We can't
mm-hmm.
all be – I won't say the terminology because it's probably the wrong – it's politically incorrect, but it still is a significant – it holds significance. It's too many chiefs, not enough – something. I'm not going to say the whole thing because it's politically incorrect, but it's true. We don't all need to be one thing. We don't all need to. There's no front line if everybody's standing on the front line. Like, it doesn't work.
Too many leaders, too few followers.
Yeah. And just because you're a follower doesn't mean that you're not a leader. And I think that that's important too. Like, just because you're not a leader, just because you're a follower doesn't mean you're not a leader. You're just a leader in a different area. We all like to
but
do
But you have a different job.
Too many leaders not. Exactly. Exactly. And there's
we
nothing
all have,
wrong
we
with
all
that.
All...
Just because somebody's out there and doing all the protesting, not everybody can be Colin Kaepernick. Like, not everybody is supposed to do what he did, because he did what he did, but there's supposed to be people behind the scenes that are making other things happen, because if everybody is Colin Kaepernick, nothing will get done, because there has to be we have to fill every area of significance when it comes to making stuff happen. And if everybody is trying to be one person, if everybody is trying to be a soldier, we're going to lose the war. And that's just the way that it is. Because even in war, there are nurses and doctors and cooks and pilots. There are, even in actual war, there's different things. So we really need to take that into consideration. Not all of us have to do the same thing. And we shouldn't judge each other if we're doing something different. That, like, that's one of the most important things that we need to know. And that's how I want to end my statement.
Okay. Well, we're here.
And then I'm ready
we'll
to play
back
the song when you guys are ready.
We'll be back.
Back in 2 weeks. We'll be back in the blink of an eye, but it's going to feel like 2 weeks. All right. Hotep, have a great day.
Hotep.
Hotep family.
Hotep.
Okay.
Hotep, mommy.
Hotep. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard to live it, but I'm afraid to die. And I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Then I go to my brother. Say, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me coming, but I know.